maybe. Or am I just showing my age? Yes, probably. So Richard Gere, the actor, who's a Buddhist. And in one of the Dharma talks, he says, every time I meet someone, in my mind I think, may you be well, may you be happy, may you be well, may you be happy. I figure he meets a lot of people, you know, so even to have... He said, my first thought, may you be well, may you be happy. So his first thought isn't, do I know you? Do you want something from me? Are you important in my life? His first thought is, may you be well, may you be happy. I just think that's a beautiful practice. So if you do that in a shopping centre, it transforms your shopping experience. I recommend it. Okay, so this is the way. Severing the chain of hatred through loving kindness. Remedy. Sort of seems so simple, but not when you look at the world. So when I was thinking about preparing for tonight, you know, I was thinking about the, you know, we've had all these atrocities in the world, like the mass shooting in Las Vegas, isn't it? And also, you know, the bombings in London, and then we have all the Syrian situation, the situation in the Middle East, and there's always seems to be a fear of terrorism attack and so forth. So there's a lot of either actual violence or potential violence in the world that can really freak us out, and does freak people out quite a lot. So it's quite a challenge not to be motivated to respond with anger or thoughts of revenge or, you know, this, anyway, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, or whatever, you know, to get back, because that's a way of danger, for us, danger in our minds. You know, we saw that after 9/11, you know, when the Twin Towers, and then it was like America said, we're going to bomb Afghanistan and it's going to be the war for peace. Now, has peace resulted? No. Has peace ever resulted from war? Not that I'm aware of, ever. So it's not a good strategy. Just logically, you look historically, no matter what your beliefs are, logically it's not a good strategy. So in Buddhism, the notion of good and evil is about, you know, what the Buddha talked about, engaging in speech and actions that's beneficial or wholesome, so they're the good ones, and those that are harmful or unwholesome, so they're not beneficial either for yourself or for anyone else, or for the world, or for the environment, etc., etc. So it simply comes down to that. So it's not a judgment about, it's not a judgment at all, it comes down to karma always comes down to karma. And it's about, well, what's going to be the consequences for myself? What's going to be the consequences for others? You know, a couple of us were talking about, because you asked some questions about the people in prison. They get that. They see the consequences of what they've done that's done harm to others, that's ended up them in prison. And actually their biggest difficulty is forgiveness towards themselves. Forgiveness towards themselves. And in that way, I mean, maybe like the guy, the shooter in Las Vegas, I think that I heard on the report that it was like 10 minutes from when he started shooting to when the police basically disabled him or shot him or whatever. 10 minutes. I mean, he did a lot of damage in 10 minutes, wasn't it? Is that right? I think so. So not a long period of time. And with the people we see in prison, like, it can be a minute you stuff up big time, or it can be longer, depending on the nature of the crime, and depending on how long you've planned it out, because that's all part of the package. And yet, then you get labelled criminal. And of course, you are a criminal, but you are also someone who has a family, someone who has, you know, or had a job until you ended up in prison, etc., etc. So there's many other factors for all of us. So the Buddha described the thoughts that underlie the impulses. Well, the karma is the action, but the impulses to that are what? Intention. The intention to do harm. That are, you know, imprints or habits or tendencies that we've laid down on our mind, on our mental continuum, that build up like habits and towards either engaging the good ones, engaging in virtue, being kind, being loving, being compassionate, being wise, being patient, all of these, being generous, all of these things, and those that are non-virtuous, so doing harm. So the Buddha said, so in relation to heavy negative actions, the Buddha warned, the sharpest sword is a word spoken in wrath or wrath, depending how you, anger. The deadliest poison is covetousness, which I only ever see in the texts, covetousness, jealousy, envy. That's the deadliest poison. The fiercest fire is hatred. So fire, it's going to destroy everything, isn't it? So hatred's going to destroy everything. The darkest night is ignorance. So the ignorance that doesn't understand how things truly exist, and, you know, we put on stories on top and hallucinate, make up stories. We don't see things as they truly are. And if we think about that just at the basic level as a society, of not recognizing the karmic fallout of whatever we say and do. I'm not saying each one of us individually here, because particularly as Dharma students, you're probably more aware of that than a lot of people, and certainly the prisoners. If they don't get caught, then there's no harm done. Well, it doesn't work that way, because even nobody knows you did bad things. You're going to reap the karma at some point, either later this life or in another life. So the Buddha, you know, to put it in brief, stated, in this way our mind creates the world. We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts we make the world. So last night I was in a teaching with Geshe, and we were looking at a text by Maitreya that talks about even in your dreams. So say you dream you kill someone. Well, you haven't actually killed someone. There might be the dream body intention, but it's not really your waking state. But there's no body there. You don't wake up and go, oh, I killed that person in my dream. There they are on the floor, because it's, you know, right? But there's still some, because it's a more subtle level of mind, it means your mind has a tendency to even think in that way, right? So there's some subtle karma going on there. And then if you wake up and go, oh yeah, that was that one that I didn't like anyway, great, I killed him in my dream, and you still know you didn't really do it. But if you rejoice in that, that makes that imprint in your mind stronger. So even our dreams, we've got to be careful. I don't know about you, but I have no control over my dreams. But there are practices to get more lucid dreaming, but you know, to bring awareness into your dreams. But it means that if we train our mind to be more loving, more kind, what's going to be on our mind most of the time? Love and kindness. It just sort of works like that. So this guy who trained his mind to, like, apparently the police said he took a long time, or they're investigating. He planned out all of that shooting. So that was on his mind so much. And even the people around him didn't know, right? So he kept it very secret. It was on his mind. And so it's like years ago, the one in Norway who killed all the people, young people on the island, he'd been planning. And it was like, you create, this is what the Buddha said, you then create that world. And then they created that world, and then they acted out on it. So we can say, well, I'm not like that. But it's a warning, isn't it, that our mind left unchecked can go in that direction. So however we perceive the world, however we relate to others, is all determined by our state of mind. So a mind of anger is going to seek revenge, isn't it? So you can say, you know, when post 9/11, when they said we're going to go and, you know, bomb Afghanistan, those people who made that decision, not necessarily the ones who carried it out because they were just the ones sent to do the dirty work, but the ones who make the decision, that's a mind of revenge. That was what, you know, the language was like that at the time. It was one of revenge. So a mind of loving kindness, on the other hand, seeks harmony, seeks peace. So depending what sort of world we want, we train our mind in that direction. So our words and our actions have both the ability to destroy and to heal. You know, they're just words, but how we use them, we can use them to destroy, we can use them to heal. A doctor's going to use them for, you know, for healing, or a counsellor, or, you know, a mother with a child, pacifying them when they get distressed and so forth, like that. So the Buddha said, it's a man's own mind. I think he means man and woman, you know, both of us. I don't think it's just men, right? It's a man's own mind, not his enemy or foe outside, that lures him to evil ways. And he said, just as the treasures are uncovered from the earth, so virtue appears from good deeds, and wisdom appears from a pure and peaceful mind. To walk safely through the maze of human life, one needs the light of wisdom and the guidance of virtue. So you've probably heard that sort of thing many, many times. So the Buddha's teaching tell us that actually having a mind that's more patient is an antidote to anger and aggression. So anger, aggression in all its forms, whether it's resentment, bitterness, being critical. So we might think, well, I'm not out there with a gun shooting people, but how much time are we critical, either of ourselves — we're our own worst enemies, really, you know, or the weapons we shoot at our own selves is awful, or towards others, or complaining. So any time we notice our mind going in that angry direction, or the mind of aversion, we can stop and practice patience, because patience is the opposite to that anger. And, you know, just look at it. Look at that anger. Investigate its nature. This we do by analytical meditation. Okay, where's this anger coming from? I don't know, it just wells up inside me. How do you even know it's there? Because, you know, my heart beats gets faster, I get hot, you know, my clench my fists, you know. Familiarize, I mean, already then, it's already become physical, but familiarize with how it arises in the mind, first thing, because it's too late once we're in full-on road rage or any other rage, or, you know, hatred, know, like that. So, because then we're in the danger of creating the heaviest negative karmas there are. So it's like, it's worse than being out of control drunk. Like, there's a student who I see on Friday mornings, and he came over this morning and we were talking, and he said he's never drunk alcohol, except one time he said, I went to a party and they had punch, and I didn't realise it had alcohol in it. And so then I got drunk, and then I was like, oh, out of control mind. And it was a bad feeling, and then he got ill, and then he threw up, and he said, you know, why do people do that? I don't know. So that's out of control drunk. But if you put on top of that anger and out of control drunk, then you're in a bad situation, like a Tenzin Palmer says, like a — our mind can be like that, like a drunken wild elephant in a rut. So a drunken wild elephant could do a lot of damage, because elephants are huge, right? So they could do — our mind can be like that a lot of the time, just completely out of control. And you just think, when does anger arrive? You know, when you get cut off in the traffic, or when someone ignores us, you know, or little things can trigger such huge responses in our mind. So this is anger, this is aversion, or even hatred, although maybe we say, I don't really ever get to hatred, but I get irritated, I get angry in my mind. And it's what the Buddha said, it's like a deadly poison, it's toxic to our mind. If you had a deadly poison in your body, what are you going to do? You want to get it out straight away. At that point, you're not asking, where does it come from? At that point, you just want to be rid of it, isn't it? So like that. So, you know, it can be toxic to ourselves, to our own mind, to our nervous system, because, you know, if we get this charge of anger like that, it just sort of unsettling, isn't it? It's just like you feel rattled. Even you don't say it, you think, I'm not going to say anything, I'm not going to do something I regret later, but you feel shaky, isn't it? It disturbs your own equilibrium. It disturbs your mind, but it disturbs you physically as well, your nervous system, if you like. So like that. So any thoughts of anger, hatred, revenge, any violence, stuff like that, disturbs our mind, and it does have that impact, physical, mental, emotional well-being. And then if we don't keep it in check, if we act out on it, well, disastrous consequences. Just like the mass killer over there in Las Vegas. So not only that, you know, the Buddha would say, not only that, even just one moment like that of anger arising in your mind can destroy eons of merits, all the good, positive things that you've done in the past that's left the virtuous imprint on your mind, zapped out of existence. So you work really hard to get to this point, and then it's like, oh, I just ruined it, like that. The thing is not to get angry at that either. Don't get angry at yourself for getting angry, because then it's like you just escalate it, isn't it? You make it worse. So we don't really want to blow all the good that we've done in the past in just one moment. So in terms of looking at the opposite, of course, you know, the ultimate cause of good is our loving kindness, is cultivating the kind heart. And I always go here because it's like it does soften our heart, not your physical heart, but the heart chakra, or, you know, heart center, or center of your mind. So all those positive states of mind, or your generosity, your kindness, patience, compassion, happiness. And all of that comes from others. So if we want to be happy, it's in relation to others. So we visualize that in the meditation, those of us in here. And in reality, our happiness comes from what? From our own minds, but it's on the basis of relating to others. Because I can be very happy in my own mind if I don't encounter anybody and say, oh, everything's fine. Oh, until I encountered the first human being. Like one of the first prisoner I ever visited, he said that. He said, there I was meditating calmly. It was all very peaceful, all very nice. And then he finished his meditation and he says, 5 minutes later, my soulmate really pissed me off. It's not the soulmate's fault. It's, you know, your mind. That got reacted. So on the basis, so it all that, so we, our, all the happy states of mind without exception come from cherishing others, you know, being kind, being loving towards others, towards the environment, towards our community, the world. Having this, wouldn't it be great if we could have unconditional love towards everybody? It doesn't mean you treat everyone equally. In one way you treat everyone equally, because we all want to be happy. None of us want to suffer. So in that way we're the same, but we're different individuals. And so it's not like you invite the whole world back home, you know, for a sort of happy loving, but you equal respect, equal regard for everybody. still have your friends and those who are close to you, and still have those that, you know, you don't want to invite home. But, you know, equally think, may you be well, may you be happy, like that. And so the cause of evil, or the cause of our suffering, is looking after number one, self-cherishing. Or not, you got to look after number one, you got to stay healthy in it, so you can look after everyone else. But the self-cherishing, the thing that says, as long as I get what I want, it doesn't matter about everybody else. The disregard for others causes us suffering, let alone what it causes to others, causes us to suffer. But we sort of don't get that. We sort of think we're doing the opposite, and we don't realise that we've caused our own suffering. You know, the idea of, I want to get what I want, good evening, when I want it, without any regard for the consequences for others or for the world. And we see that in the world today. Now we're in an environmental crisis because for so long human beings have disregarded the impact of our, you know, consumer lifestyle of, you know, wanting things and wanting more things and wanting more things. So like that. And now we're paying the consequences, if you like, you know. So we're driven by these desires, wanting pleasant things, experiences. And then, you know, the aversion and anger towards, especially if people don't give us what we want or give us what we don't want, then we get angry. Then we don't like, we put them, you're not on my Christmas list anymore. You know, I'm not inviting you to the party. Whatever. So patience is a way to de-escalate that mind of aggression, that mind of anger, the pain of the anger. So when we feel any strong emotion, there's always that tremendous pull. We want some resolution. And years ago, I used, you know, they'd have these, they probably still have, and it would be, the workshops were called anger resolution. Anger resolution. And so we'd all, conflict resolution, that's right. Conflict resolution. And then they changed it to anger management, because it's really about managing those strong emotions rather than, we won't necessarily resolve a situation. So rather than focus on the goal of resolution, focus on how we're dealing with it, how we're managing our emotions around that. And so then it became anger management. Yeah. And if we get that strong emotion, yeah, of course, we want it to be resolved. This is why it feels like a poison and we just want it out of ourselves. We're just like, stop, I don't want to have that. That, you know, we don't necessarily go away around it in the skillful way. So what do we usually do? You know, we usually act in ways that are going to escalate the aggression. Have you ever had an argument with somebody and then you just keep pressing your point, and then this is not about name and shame, we all do this, right? Then you keep pressing your point and, yeah, but I'm right. And it just, nothing gets resolved, does it? Because they think they're right. And what are we wanting to prove, you know? So we usually strike back, you know, strike out, we hit back, or, you know, something hurts us and then we don't want even, you know, there's some initial hurt or bad feeling and there's still some softness there in your heart. If we can capture that and remember, oh, this is another human being that I cherish. And I particularly find this on the road. I know I always often use analogies of driving and on the road, because that's where you see a lot of craziness, or I do. And it's like people get in the car and they forget that's another human being in that other car, and it's like they become the metal of the car. They become hard and closed off. Anyway, it seems to happen. But if we can catch that softness where we're still relating as reasonable human beings, you know, then we can stop that anger or thoughts of aggression or something coming up. But usually it's just like, I just want to get even, the heart's pumping, the mind's plotting the revenge and so forth. And it's a really got a hard quality to it, like that metal is like, we've lost the softness in our heart. And then what happens? We say something or do something that we regret later and you create more pain and more aggression. And if we familiarize with that, then that becomes natural to us. So if people are, you know, these mass killers and terrorists and things like that, it's because everyone around them is doing the same thing. And actually, I don't know if anyone's been in the army or done an army training or anything like that. Has anyone done that? So, you have?
Well, it's depending on the service.
Yeah. So I don't know if they trained you there, but it's like there's in this way a way of dehumanizing or desensitizing to this is another human being here, because in our nature we only want to help each other in our nature, but you know, to get people to shoot other people, you've got to like make them into machines almost. Would you agree with that? Or maybe you didn't have that in your training.
Just in reserves.
Just in reserves. Just a bunch of students having a good time.
Guns,
yeah.
But just targets.
Oh, just targets, right.
Running around the countryside at night.
Oh, okay. Getting fit. Yeah, that's a different thing. I saw one, it was, I think it was in the, is it Kuwait or, anyway, one of those Middle East, Gulf War. And they had the young people, they're young. A lot of them blokes, young. And they were being played in their ears this really metallic, harsh music to really desensitize them so that then they could shoot. I mean, I have not been in that situation, thankfully. But, you know, it's very... So your mind then becomes an altered state, not in its natural state. Anyway, so that's what it's like. So then you create more aggression, you create more pain. And then those people, when they come back from that situation, what happens, you know? They come back from a war, they get PTSD because it's not natural. And it's like, how do I deal with that? Post-traumatic stress, maybe for the rest of your life. So the Buddha said we need to familiarize and tame our minds to rid these negative, destructive thoughts that cause harm to ourselves and others, and to cultivate the positive states that are our nature, our love, compassion, patience, generosity, and so forth. So patience is like, in a way, can be a synonym for loving kindness. The speed of loving kindness can be very slow. This is why we have to train our mind more and more. It is natural to us, but developing that patience, you are developing the patience through loving kindness. And Lama Atisha, who's Atisha, was at Nalanda Monastery, 11th century, 10th century, anyway, which is in, was, it's now ruins, in Bihar state in India, near Rajagriha, where the Buddha gave the Heart Sutra teachings, the Perfection of Wisdom teachings, the Prajnaparamita teachings, near there. And then he was asked to go, Lama Atisha was asked to go to Tibet to put all the, because the Buddhist teachings had gone down. There'd been a king who tried to suppress the Dharma. And so he was asked to come and bring it all back up, revive it. Before he did that, he was in Indonesia getting teachings on compassion from his teacher, Salingpa. Anyway, so that was a long way around. Lama Atisha said that if a painful situation arises, be patient, and if a pleasant situation arises, be patient, which is really interesting, isn't it? It's like... an interesting point in terms of patience, the cessation of suffering, patience and fearlessness. So having the courage to, in one way, sit with things. So it's not about being a doormat, but not doing a knee-jerk reaction. It takes greater strength to say, I'm not going to respond like everybody else is in this situation. I'm going to respond with kindness. I'm going to respond with compassion. This is something I found quite challenging, for example, when we had Haron Manos and the Sydney siege, right? And then after that, we had the interfaith services. And so there were two of the hostages that were killed in that situation, and now they've done all the inquiries and all that sort of thing. Two hostages killed, but also he was killed. And so I'd go to the interfaith services and they'd say, oh, we're praying for the two people killed. There were three people killed. But as a society, we're judging this one, and so we don't want to pray for that one. That one needs your prayers more than those, in a way, because that's the one that's got the disturbed mind. If you have an understanding of karma, then you think, well, you want that one to deal with it because you don't want them to come back and keep doing it again. I mean, if you look from a Buddhist perspective, quite a different matter. But regardless, there was still that person killed, and that person was still a very suffering being. I mean, you don't go and do things like that if you're a nice, peaceful, loving, kind person, do you? And then they look at his backstory, and he had all these other offences and things he'd done, and you can see, not a happy chappy. And it's not to take it lightly, but the fact that's the fact, you know. So often, you know, we can't really change somebody else's mind, we can only really change our own, but at least have compassion to that person who's so mentally disturbed or, you know, deluded. The Buddha says we're all deluded, but there are degrees. There are degrees. Okay, some of us, you know, can at least keep our mind in check. Most of us can. So loving kindness counters that mind of ill will. So, just like we did previously, to cultivate that loving kindness, we start with ourselves. This is what the Buddha taught. We start with ourselves. We've got to have that towards ourselves. Do we accept ourselves? Okay, hey, I'm not perfect. You know, it's not headline news. I stuff up. I make mistakes. But, you know, and that loving kindness means being patient with myself too. I'm a work in progress, right? And just keep working at it. And so we have that love towards ourselves. What's the alternative? I mean, we're going to hate ourselves? We're going to, you know, be at war internally? Because it's really what the Buddha said. The enemy is within, really. This is, you know, we're hostile towards ourselves. So the counter to that, loving kindness towards yourself, you know, the wish, may I be happy. This is not being ego-grasping. This is not being just self-cherishing. Or if it is, it's a way the Dalai Lama says, if you're going to be self-cherishing, be wise self-cherishing. So you're doing it not only for your own benefit, but for others. So gradually that helps us get rid of the negative attitudes that produce, and the actions that produce unhappiness for us in this life. So, and then when we've developed that well towards ourselves, then we develop it towards somebody close to us, and think, well, I already like this person, so let's start the easiest. And unfortunately, that most difficult one can be ourselves, to have that towards, unfortunately. You'd think it'd be easy, but it's not. But then towards somebody close to you, and you extend that out. And so when you accomplish that, then you try the more difficult task of bringing that loving kindness towards somebody unfamiliar. So those people who are close to us, we want to keep on their good side, and we want them, you know, to keep on our good side, because they're the people who support us and benefit us and listen to all our stories and, you know, go, oh yes, I hear you had a bad day, oh that's terrible, oh they said, well, you know, they listen to all our boring stories and everything. And then, okay, so then, but what about the ones who they don't help us in particular, but they don't harm us in particular? Mostly, as the Buddha said, we're mostly indifferent to that, and that's most people in the world, let alone animals, and let alone going to any other world. And so that's slightly more difficult. And then we think, okay, I'm getting good at this. Then towards those you do have difficulty with. So instead of guns towards them, we say loving kindness towards them. The one who is in your face, or, you know, the one you have difficulty with. And of course, there's people, always people. I mean, even you can say, oh, well, they're actually my family because you're around them. I mean, we can, what is it, push each other's buttons. Someone was telling me that they were staying with a couple, a married couple, and she said it was terrible to watch because it was like they knew how to push each other's buttons and they did it all the time, and they were very, but they didn't leave the relationship, so they were just making each other upset all the time. Why would you do that? Why? You know, does that make you feel better? Not really. It makes you feel horrible, doesn't it? So the loving kindness towards the ones you have difficulty with. So that's the real challenge, is to have it towards those, you know, who really, you don't have the same political attitude, you know, they have. So I was speaking to someone the other week, and he was going to stay with his uncle, and he was a bit concerned because this guy's, I mean, he oozes loving kindness. He's just a very gentle being. And he said, oh, my uncle is negative about everybody, you know. He's anti this. He's got every ism, you know. He's sexist, he's racist, he's against this, he's against that, he's against everybody. And he said, how am I going to deal with it? And he said, oh, loving kindness. That's how you're going to deal with that, you know. Just have loving kindness. Anyway, the situation wasn't as bad as he thought it was going to be, but it's a challenge to be, and we don't always choose who we have to be around, you know, in a study situation, a work situation, even in a family situation. So we just have to, I mean, I find that, I was saying earlier, with the prisoners, who they don't get to choose who they share this tiny space with, maybe for quite a few years, and if they don't get on, you've got to work on your mind. It's the only way to deal with it. And hope that you get moved to somewhere else, but you might get moved to someone you even don't like as much as this one. So patience with that as well. So we have to be patient with ourselves, with the fact that we're human, we make mistakes, and that there are more important things than I'm right, you know, I'm the one who's right. So towards ourselves, we just, you know, take our time and go, okay, I'm an imperfect, not there yet. But, you know, lighten up, take it easy with ourselves, practice patience and loving kindness, compassion towards ourselves. That's how we can help ourselves, and that's how we can help each other. So, I mean, we have to be entirely honest with ourselves, and particularly if we're in a state of anger, and recognize that and say, yep, I'm furious, I'm in a rage, I'm this, I'm that, whatever. It's not about suppressing anything. Patience isn't about, oh, well, I'll just put it all under a mat and pretend it's all okay. It's actually acknowledging it and go, yep, I am furious. Now, how am I going to deal with this? We've got to be gentle with ourselves, actually, because, you know, it can be very fragile. But if we wait and we don't fuel the anger and go, you know, we can let go of the internal dialogue. Yep, there's the ratty thoughts of anger, but, you know, I can calm my mind down, I can meditate on that, I can let that go. And then notice, you know, am I blaming, am I criticizing just in my mind? Am I beating myself up for doing the wrong thing? This is torture. We're torturing ourselves. You know? We hear all these horrific stories of in war and all the torture that's done to get information out of people, but we do this and it just leads to more pain, more suffering, more confusion. So, you know, be patient. So I was, you know, earlier, again, we're having a conversation, and before we started the session, and the question came up, is anyone in prison ever innocent? And I made the joke, everyone in prison is innocent if you ask them. But no, there's a lot of guilty people in prison, most of them are. But this story of this woman, she was convicted of murder, and in America, and she ended up in prison. and she didn't do the murder. And she said to herself, well, I can either be angry here for however long my sentence is, and it's a murder sentence, they're not short, or, and I can decide I'm locked up in these chains of the prison cell, or I can say this is my meditation room. And that's what she did. 17.5 years before her conviction was overturned. She walked out of that prison with no anger in her mind. A very well-developed practitioner. She had a good meditation technique, kept her going. So, I mean, it's not the retreat center you asked for, but she made use of that. So you could say if there was ever a case for what we call justifiable anger, people would agree, you know, you should be angry in that situation. Whereas somebody else, you know, hit people in prison. I did not kill that woman. I did not rape that woman. And they're just like over and over. And it's torture to hear, let alone being that person experiencing that. It's quite awful. It's really poison. And so again, Shantideva, who wrote the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, he was another one at Nalanda. And he said, if you can change the situation, why get angry? Why worry? You can change it. If you can't, why get angry? Why worry? Because you can't. So if we can do something, we do it with courage, you know, enormous courage, the sort of sense of fearlessness that goes with that. And, you know, when we talk about in a Mahayana context of being a courageous bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is what? A being who has infinite loving kindness, and then being courageous in that, courageous to do whatever it needs to take. So we have to, you know, come back to checking up on our mind and, you know, think, well, if my mind is well attuned, well habituated to negative thoughts, self-criticism and the like, or and so forth, it's because I've practiced that well this life and other lifetimes, because that's how we get good at something. And the same, if we see the desire to say something mean or nasty, to complain, to badmouth someone, because we want to get that anger out, well, it becomes like a tidal wave, a tsunami, like the Bali, you know, volcano about to erupt, and everyone has to be evacuated from your vicinity. It's like that. So any actions that we do in anger only don't resolve, they only ever escalate the situation. So, you know, developing patience, fearlessness means sitting with those feelings, sitting with that uncomfortable energy. You could say it's like sitting on a wild horse or a wild tiger that could eat you up, but learning to ride it, learning to tame it, learning to subdue it. So again, that wild tiger, that wild horse is what? Our mind, isn't it? Like that. Oh, good. I was just making sure I didn't go on too much blah, blah. Okay, so so when we practice the practice that we do, the teachings of the Buddha, you know, when we follow that, it's like, in a way, we're free falling. It's like the Buddha doesn't give you anything to hold on to, because we have to let go of our familiar, well-trodden paths. But with, you know, it's like free falling, but with faith and confidence, isn't it? We have faith in the teachings of the Buddha, otherwise we wouldn't be here. But it's like you're taking a giant leap into the unknown when we want to change our behavior. It's like the uncharted waters of compassion, of loving kindness, releasing these chains that bind us. So it's the chains of the anger, of the conflict, and so forth, that, you know, sort of keep us trapped. So The only real resolution we can have is some to all this negative feelings that arise until we ourselves have a realization of emptiness, a direct realization of emptiness, become an Arya being, until in that way we're liberated from samsara, but hey, way to go. So until then, we're going to have these disturbing, quite strong negative emotions and feelings come up, this sort of energy. But we have to recognize, yep, that's because I'm a human being. I'm going to have the suffering, but at least I can do something with that. I can abide with that. I can wait till that energy, you know, it rises up, it abides, it passes away. So it never resolves into something solid, into action, unless we make it do that. So it's just like you watch your mind go through that rattiness, or you say, okay, today I'm a danger to the world. I better just zip the lip and just watch the mind. Okay. So if we look at it, if we start to investigate, so another way, so one way is sitting, another way analysing, investigating, any pain of aggression, grieving, loss, resentment, jealousy, any physical pain, if we look into that, behind that there's always something we're attached to, because the mind of anger is the mind that doesn't get what it wants, and that's the mind of desire, of attachment. So we're always looking at something to hold on to, and the Buddha's saying, nope, that's a danger zone as well. And so as soon as we find I'm holding on to that, this is something we'll experience and have to experience again and again on the spiritual path. So it feels like almost every moment in your life there's a point when you realize you have a choice, and this is what true liberation is, where our mind has a choice. If we can get that moment when it has a choice, we're not just going down the same old track we've gone down before and go, oh, I can respond in anger. I can be really, you know, sort of mind of revenge, and I can really let that fester in my mind. Oh, I can drop it, just like that, I can drop it. When it's already full-blown, too late. But when it's just arising, we can do that. We do have a choice. We have a choice whether to be open or whether to be closed, whether to hold on or whether to let go, whether to harden with anger or soften with loving-kindness. This is our choice. You know, loving-kindness, we open up to others. So again and again on the spiritual path, we get presented with this choice. We get presented with it each day when we hear these atrocities that happen in the world. You know, you listen to the news and, you know, get overwhelmed before you even got out of bed. So compassion and loving kindness, you know, having that, even when we hear that news, towards the person, the perpetrator and so forth, that they be free of hatred, anger in their minds, violence in their minds. And only then we can truly hope for peace. So recently we celebrated, some of us, I don't know if you did, 21st of September, International Day for Peace, World Peace Day, UN Day for Peace. So 21st of September became that. Some years ago, in England, one person had a vision. This is all it takes, one person to have a vision and believe in yourself. So his vision was, wouldn't it be good to have one day in the year when there's a truce, that nobody picks up arms against anybody, nobody fights a war, nobody shoots to kill. That was his vision. And then he got momentum behind that, and the momentum built behind that, and he took it to the UN. And the UN made, as a result, 21st of September, World Peace Day. So far, it hasn't ever happened that there's been a day in the year where nobody, where all the arms are put down, where there's no weapons used. Hasn't occurred yet. It's tragic, but it's true. And of course, the first, when they went to launch World Peace Day, 21st of September, the launch was to be on 11th of September of that year, 2001, wasn't it? 2001? 9/11, as we know, 9/11. So guess what? No media coverage, because all the media coverage was about the Twin Towers, of course. So it didn't get a media coverage then, but from this one person's inspiration, you know, that vision grew and grew and grew. And even though they hasn't achieved the goal yet, that project has had many, many, like in Afghanistan, they were able to get behind, you know, where the fighting was happening and get medication to people in the villages, since there's many projects that have benefited in war zones from the Peace One Day. It's called Peace One Day. So this Peace One Day is a reminder that conflict is never very far away, you know, out there in the world, but we can also say in our own minds as well, can't we? And maybe most of us can't engage in such, you know, huge projects or heroic endeavours or so forth, but for each one of us, peace is always possible within our own minds. In fact, the Dalai Lama said, if all school children learn to meditate, one generation of children, that's all it would take to have world peace. Amazing. So, I mean, I went to a number of interfaith events on that day, and including the first interfaith, truly interfaith event in Wagga Wagga. They had Catholic, Aboriginal, Catholic, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu for the first time. So quite a powerful message for peace, and like in Parramatta, they had the A to Z of religions in Australia, I think. It was an incredible number of people reciting prayers for peace. And they said that in Australia there's like 146 religions. That's amazing, isn't it? I don't know about you, but I can't name that many. I mean, the Buddha did say there's 84,000 paths to enlightenment, so there's a lot of different traditions. But having all the people of different spiritual traditions come together in peace, not come together and try and prove how their tradition's better than anyone else, but say, here we are, all people taking responsibility for everyone in the world, really. Because if it's not people of faith who do that, who's going to do it? It has to be those who have some spiritual, strong spiritual connection. I mean, we all have strong spiritual connection, but those of us who really embody that, activate it in our lives. So that, you know, the teachings of all the spiritual traditions show us the ways out of fear, hatred, violence, conflict, is the way that we practice peace, inclusion, harmony, reconciliation, acting with love, compassion, understanding.
Can I just ask why do you have to be spiritual to believe in those things?
You don't. But I would.
I know a lot of people that aren't religious at all.
A lot of, yeah. And this is the thing, I think with our senses, that's what that has indicated. A lot of people have. So I said being spiritual, not religious. Because I think it's having that. The spiritual side is that there's a deeper meaning to your life, and that meaning is to be of benefit to others and to enhance the positive qualities for yourself and for all those you engage with and for the world, you know, as a result. So that's what I would call being spiritual. It's like...
The way you said it, it sounded like sort of religion, perhaps I'm talking about
religion. No, it was just because of that context of the interfaith, but... And I think more and more people are going towards not having a religion and nonetheless having spiritual inclination, because it's sort of like in our nature, you know, but then we get caught up in materialism, and that's a whole other thing. So we do have that, and this is why I think, you know, certainly in my tradition, the Lamas, Lama Yeshe, even he passed away in the early 80s, he said, get rid of the R word, religion. And the Dalai Lama had a recent a book and one of the tours he came to Australia, and it was beyond religion, because out of all the people in the world, you know, there's at least a billion, I think, if not more, it must be more, who don't have any religion or don't express to have a religion. What are you going to do? Ignore them? Say, sorry, you don't have a religion, you know, bad luck. We've got to look after especially those people who don't have some, you know, or don't recognise those qualities within themselves, really, don't recognise those qualities in themselves. So, so then you think, well, make a choice about what I read. I mean, the news comes on, okay, you hear the news. But there's a lot of, or the movies, there's a lot of violent movies, there's a lot of violence on television, there's a lot of violent books, e-books, whatever. And it's just like, do I really want that sort of violence in my mind? Do I really want my mind to be full of those sort of thoughts? It does affect us. And so it's like, okay, well, I can choose not to go there. I can choose not to have conversations that are bring hostility, that are judgmental as much as possible, and watch it when I get into that space. And I can avoid situations as much as possible that make me angry. You know? Because it's like, if it is a toxin, it's like your whole system saying, don't go there, you know? We can't always choose that. So we can all cultivate a practice of loving kindness in all our relationships, in peace in all our relationships, widening our circle of love behind our, beyond our comfort zone, beyond those close to us, to those we have difficulty with, those whose politics is different to ours, whose religion, whose ethics is different to ours, even exact opposite to ours. And so in that way, we can look at, check up in our daily life, how we work, how we study, how we live, how we relate to others, and see, does my life express loving kindness? Does it express a spirit of peace from my heart? Okay, so I just wanted to read this prayer, and then we can have questions. So this is prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. We've just had World Animal Day, and St. Francis Assisi, I think, was the patron saint of animals. Loved animals, okay. But this is an interesting prayer. My spiritual director, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, has modified this to a sort of Buddhist flavour. So in our organisation, when people take refuge, you know, refuge ceremony, they get the book of prayers, and it includes this one. So I think it's quite great, because cool, because it comes from a Christian tradition, but it's been sort of modified. And I think that's expression of not dividing, but, you know, valuing each other and living in harmony. So I'll finish with this. You might know the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, don't know. Lord Buddha, so you can see he put in Buddha, okay? But Francis of Assisi didn't put Buddha, okay? Lord Buddha, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, unity. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is error, truth. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is sadness, joy. Where there is darkness, light. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled, happiness for the ego, that's a Buddhist take, as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is pardoning that we are pardoned, it is in dying, having practiced, that we are born to eternal life. And that's where the St. Francis prayer ends. And then Lama Zopa says, from happiness to happiness up to full enlightenment. And then he added, may all beings effortlessly attain the transcendental blissful state of omniscient Buddhahood. Okay. Questions? Must have been some coming up. Yes.
Sometimes I think I do have trouble with loving kindness. Actually, it's only one person. This is one
person. There's always one person, isn't there? There's always that one.
Yeah.
And you know what we say? They're your precious teacher of loving kindness. So, again, Tenzin Palmer says, they're the one who rubs you up the wrong way. So they're like sandpaper. They rub you up the wrong way. In the process, you get smooth. And that's nice to say, but in reality, when you're face-to-face with them, okay, continue. To
right. I think for most of the time, like, if I, like, see anyone I dislike, usually, if I take a grudge, it's like, okay, it would usually wear off, like, quite quickly.
Yes.
And I can let that go quite quickly. But then
there's this one person.
That, like, I struggled really hard when I tried to do like metta meditation.
Yeah.
And like when I tried like spread loving kindness, it's like okay, you start from the person really close to you, and spread out to them, everyone. And I was like, okay, good.
Stop. Bad.
Yeah.
So,
it's quite difficult, like, just to radiate the same loving kindness.
It is difficult.
Yeah.
Nobody said it was easy. And in fact, there's a book by the Dalai Lama, Widening the Circle of Love, and it's not like you do this all in one meditation. You spend a long time on the first one, yourself. He did include yourself, and the Buddha included yourself, right? And then the one close to you. So you spend a lot of time, and then he's got like booster technique, try this, booster technique, try that. So you actually got, that's why we have to have patience as well with ourselves, because it takes a long time. These tendencies in our mind are ingrained. And so what we do with that one, who's the difficult person, we exaggerate. On top of whatever difficulty we exaggerate, our minds do, we're not even aware, everything about them's bad, you know, it gets to that point. Maybe not for you, but a lot of times it does. And, you know, oh, there's that person. And, you know, our mind goes into freak out mode and builds this whole other story on top, which is our aversion, which is our hostility, not necessarily hatred, because I don't know that most of us, most of the time, get to that. But it's just like, yeah, this one, it's hard to have loving kindness because our mind's judging, because our mind judges them, you know. And this is where it's easy to say, you know, but it is our practice. And so you've got to say, okay, this person is like the stone in my shoe. It's really uncomfortable, but, maybe they're harder than a stone in the shoe because you just take the stone out and no problem. But, so it's uncomfortable, but this person, through being with or thinking of that person, is going to help me really develop loving kindness towards, okay, you know, you might think, well, this is the only person at the moment, but, and then what about the animal realm when you start looking at animals, loving kindness towards animals? What about the cockroaches? Maybe you don't have any, but... Oh, I really love you. Come in and stay, you know. Would you like dinner? Yeah. No, you've helped yourself already? Right. you know, think about it. Animals as well. So this person is helping you. So, of course, if they're causing harm, if because the reason that you have difficulty with them, you see them causing harm, and you have any capacity to prevent them from causing harm, then we have to do that. And that's being courageous as well. So that's on one side, because why don't we want them to cause harm? because it creates negativity for themselves as well as harming somebody. So if we can, skillfully, I mean, I don't say throw yourself in front of a mass murderer and trying to get the, you know, leave that to the trained troops to do, you know. We've got to be skillful and know what is our capacity to do. But what we do know is we can't change them. So we can work out strategies for, I mean, you can have the loving kindness meditation, and then, as it says, avoid people who make you angry. Well, that might be very well, but if it's a family member, or I don't know, then maybe it's someone you can't avoid. But you can say, you know what, I'm going to limit my, if I go beyond 10 minutes, then I know they're going to really, I'm going to get annoyed. And say, they're going to annoy me, but it's me who gets annoyed, not them. So it's my mind that's getting annoyed. Why is my mind getting annoyed? Because I'm expecting some different behaviour or something. Why am I expecting that? They're always consistent. They're always, you know, a horrible person or whatever. They're just being who they are. Or you can focus on, well, they do have these good qualities, and remind yourself, actually, they do have, you know, innately they do have all these things, but even you might see, oh, they're loving towards that one. Everyone doesn't dislike them, just me, or everyone doesn't have the same response. And maybe not just you, maybe other people as well. But there are people who love them. There are people, you know, we're working with these prisoners. You sort of go, well, yes, you are a criminal. You are in prison because you have harmed in some way persons, animals, whatever. Fact. But you're also, you know, have a loving father or mother or child, or, you know, you have other qualities as well. So we have to use different strategies, and also with that, keep the patience towards yourself. Just think, well, you know, I'm not a Buddha. I'm a human being trying to practice loving kindness. And, you know, so the more you do your, and this is the thing, it's a long haul. It's not instant, as you might have guessed in Buddhism. It's a long, long haul. We gradually, slowly, and so we weaken. So if you think, well, I'm not reacting to them as much as I was, that's huge success. That's huge success. So then you think, where in my mind or in my conversations with other people do I go and, you know, have a debrief with my best friend and say, oh, and another thing they said and another thing they did. What's that doing? That's reinforcing the negative. So this is where we have to watch. How can I minimize this for myself? But not expect it's just going to go away. This might be the practice. This person might be your practice for the rest of this life. Get used to it. And say thank you to them. Thank you! You know, I hear these stories of our teachers who had someone like that deliberately around them. And it was just like, really?
That's a practice.
Yeah, that's a great practice. I'm not doing it. Really? You had the most obnoxious person around you to remind you of how much you need to practice. So...
That person is actually quite difficult. It's actually been a while, but like,
it's been a while.
He's not here.
Yeah,
like around.
He's not around.
At least 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's in your mind.
It's in my mind. Like it's some sort of like harassment, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's like a direct effect ish, and something came up actually not too long ago.
So anything like harassment in that, if there are legal steps or whatever you can take, you do that. I mean, you don't just say, I've got to wear it. If there's some steps that you can take, but if not, or if they've been taken and or whatever, or if it, you know, for whatever reason you can't do that, then you have to say, okay, I have to recognize how this is affecting me, and that person's not even here. How has this continued to affect me? I am doing this to myself. Yeah?
Yeah.
And work with that. And not beating yourself up for that. Just that's what the Buddha said. Just recognize that. Oh, look, I keep going over the situation, going over. And it's very hard, especially if you do like meditation retreats or something, because that's the situation that will come to the surface. So that makes it really difficult. But it's helpful. We'd say, you know, it helps bring those things out in the end. In the end, it's you're actually, we'd say, purifying it or getting rid of it. But when you're in the middle of it, so it's been 2 years. Has that mind of aversion towards this, not necessarily towards this person, but that dwelling on the situation lessened for you at all in 2 years?
Because I'm here now. It's more like I kind of forgot about him for like last year, like the total whole last year.
Excellent.
Absolutely nothing. But then like recently, like I think something also came out of it.
Yeah.
And then like it kind of bounces back up.
Yeah. And then when it bounces back up, you go, okay, well, now's an opportunity to see how I can deal with it.
Yeah.
And then relax, let it go. Don't try and resolve. That's what the Buddha said. We look for a resolution, but there's really no resolution. We just get to a part. It's like not even a complete acceptance, but some sort of acceptance for ourselves. And at some point we go, you know what? That's as good as it's going to get. And maybe it'll get better later on, but for now that's as good as it's going to get. And I just have to sit with that. And know, yeah, there are so many difficult situations like that in life, isn't there? Yeah, it's really challenging. Yeah. But you become a better person for it. Yes.
I guess it's not really a question, it's just an experience.
Yes.
So when you were saying just now about the Buddha said that hatred is actually one of the, that's more dangerous than jealousy and anger, is actually quite true.
Yeah.
Because when I was young, I never really hate anyone.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe they're frustrated a bit, but then it's still alright. It's just that there was once in my life where there's an incident, and because of that incident, because someone has deceived me,
yeah,
it somehow brought out a hatred.
Yes.
And it's very different than anger.
Yes.
And it was that intention where once this is actually brought up, you start thinking, I don't know how to explain, but it's a very scary feeling.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, why did she do that or something like that?
Yeah.
But because when you're so caught up in that moment, that a thought actually came up that it was like, oh, maybe it's better that that person. But it's a very, very harmful thought. It's like, oh, like you really want to do something that's harmful to that. And when that thought arises, that's when I actually kind of snap out of it, only to realize that it's actually a very scary experience.
You're right. When we say that these strong emotions like that, it's like they hijack our mind, you know? It's like a hijacker comes in. Truly, isn't it? Just totally takes you. It's just like, and then as you say, you get to a point where at ethical, you know, in terms of your own ethics, you go, oh, no, now my mind's gone too far. You know, I've got to put a stop to that. Because the idea of doing harm to someone is too unbearable for you. So that, you know, that's your natural positive qualities coming through and recognizing that. So it's wonderful that you've got that as a counter, as a balance to that. So we all have that. Well, most of us have that. I mean, except for these mass murderers and so forth. But even sometimes then, it's not so clear. You know, one of these young terrorist guys who's Australian who's been arrested, and he said, I don't know, he had some fear. And that's why he was doing what he was doing. So it's never just straightforward. Our minds are, as the Buddha said, very complex. There's sort of like whole complexity of emotions going on at that moment.
Hatred has, it kind of pumps
up
certain adrenaline.
Hatred is such a, it's a strong energy, but we have to be able to, the energy side's no problem, but what the thoughts and emotions that come along with it, very harmful and very disturbing to ourselves. So I imagine that was very disturbing, like, to you. Like, and sometimes even your body, you can get into tremors and shakes, and just from what the mind does, isn't it? Incredible. So thank you. It's good to see. Yeah, hatred, the worst one. Yeah. Poison. It is poison. Yeah. Awesome. Anyone else? Anything? Or comments or other stories? Success stories?
Yes. I'm just curious, what you said about, like, I think you're talking about, like, what we watch or see or, like, read in the news.
Yeah.
Like, I guess because we're not, we don't really think about it, like, say we're watching something on TV or something, so, like, should we be aware of what, like, sort of attitudes that creates, like, what we see, like,
yeah.
Be careful of our source of entertainment.
Like, well, yeah. So two different things. One is news. I think it's very beneficial to watch the news and you can see what's happening. And that's a good way to practice loving kindness while you're watching the news to all those people and everyone affected and so forth. But when it's, if you like, the stuff of fantasy, which is everything else that's not factual, we have to think about what do I want my mind to be in my mind? What sort of images do I want in my mind? Because everything leaves an imprint on our mind. Even it can be a very subtle one. It leaves an imprint on our mind, a tendency on our mind. And so, of course, if we have a balanced mind already and we watch some horror movie and then we watch some murder thing and then we watch some, you know, romance thing and then, you know, whatever, and but in our life we don't encounter all of that negative stuff and so forth, and our mind's pretty balanced, then we can use our you know, sort of mental factor of discernment and discrimination, and we're okay. So what it is saying, how much of all that negativity do we want in our mind? I mean, I find it fascinating that we, as a society, you know, of course we're against war and so forth and we think it's awful in reality, but then we create all these games and computer games and all of that sort of thing, apps and whatever, where it's all shooting and killing and God knows what. Why do we do it? I don't know. Ask a psychologist. Why do we do this? You know, they had a good news newspaper one time in America. It went out of business. Nobody wanted to know the good news. Truly. We're sort of like psychotic, I think. Was it schizophrenic? Schizophrenic. We got this, like, our minds in two directions. So the thing is just to discern for yourself, you know, that how much is your mind getting used to something, if you were to engage in that, of, you know, violence and anger. And it's okay for most of us, but then you see, like, the guy in Norway, he'd been watching a lot of that sort of stuff and whatever. So his mind was already, if you like, susceptible. So there's this debate, isn't it, that goes on, you know, amongst what children can watch and not, because, you know, so forth. And they say it doesn't really affect their mind. It does affect their mind. But the Buddha says everything affects our mind, isn't it? Everything affects our mind. So it's up to you. You can come in my place and be really boring. You know, that's what we say, isn't it? Really boring. Everything's really nice. Why is that boring? Why is nice boring? I don't know. It's not. I don't think it is. I could be, you know, I might have a slight, I could be a bit biased in one direction. What else? Anyone else?
Yeah. Actually, I sort of have like the same situation as Nishan before. Like, a best friend of mine, he turned against me. Like, we were best friends for more than years. Like, I can't remember how long.
Yeah.
And then he turned against me one day, and I was like, okay, I just go insane. I just hated everything. I was like, not myself.
Yes, not yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
Same thing, I thought about harmful way, and I actually sort of like almost did it, which just to scare him like that. And yeah, I went through some difficulties. So after that, I just gone through a lot of counselings and stuff. And when I look back, it's like a really stupid thing to do. And I'm not proud of it as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes when people still, because no matter where you go, you always meet people who will turn against you or just like,
yes, absolutely,
give you trouble. And every time when they did it, I just thought of, I thought back of what I did last time, and I just don't want that to happen again. So
yeah,
I just hold everything together, and sometimes I'll just go back, maybe just scream in my pillow or something like that, do something just to release my hatred or anger, because yep, I just don't want to hurt anybody else again, like
yep,
what I did last time. So is that actually a proper way to do it?
Or yeah, yeah, that's good, because it's like Lama Yeshe, founder of our organization, he said, becoming your own therapist, that's what you're doing. You're working out, okay, I've got to deal with these, we all have these strong emotions that freak us out. And as you said, I'm not myself. It's just like, where did that come from, you know? And you're finding ways that are not harmful to deal with that. So you, I mean, you stop yourself from doing something you regret later, but even having the thought of that disturbs your mind, isn't it? So, yeah, so then you're sort of going, wow, this is where the mind can go if it's unchecked. Any one of us, it's where the mind can go, unchecked. So then you're checking your mind. It's perfect practice. It's wonderful practice. Because you're checking, going, ah, there it goes. Don't want that to happen again. And but the holding this, what's not healthy is the being ashamed, because I mean, there's nothing wrong like you would say being ashamed in the sense of I've gone against everything I believe, or my thoughts have gone against that. Even you said you didn't actually do it, but you maybe planned and whatever, may nearly did it, so close, it was just like I was on the cliff. What was I going to say? But the shame, you can be shame at the time and go, oh, that would be shameful thing to do, but then release that shame, let go of that shame. So even the shame when it comes up, because that's just like festering inside you and making you feel bad and dragging you down, that's not good, that's not healthy. So then you go, you sneaky shame, you're not going to get me this time. Oh, I don't know. You do it in your way. I've got your number. Yeah. So anything like that comes up in our minds, and just, you know, fantastic, I found you out. Yeah. But it's slowly, slowly, isn't it? The healing from that. Yeah. Yeah. And all of this then makes us develop compassion for other people who go through similar situations. And then we can benefit others. Because we know what it's like, we've been through that, and you know you can get through it, and you can deal with the situation in a healthy way. So that's a great benefit then to others. Okay.
Nope, just gonna wrap everything up.
You wrap?
Yep.
Okay, so we can, as before we wrap, we'll wrap. Not that rap, this rap. There was a great rapper actually in Wagga as well. I've asked him to come to Sydney and do some things here, because he's just really good, strong message for peace in rap style. I think, and he's, you know, he's young, tall, handsome. I'm sure you'd love him. And really powerful energy, really, and very positive. Wow. Anyway, good package. So let's dedicate all our merits so that all our wisdom and loving kindness may grow and grow in our hearts. It's what's most needed in the world today, in our own minds, for our own benefit, for the benefit of all those we encounter.